Forbidden Panel welcomes you to Panelcast, Forbidden Panel's weekly podcast featuring movie and comic news and reviews. And now, your hosts, AJ and Brian.
All right, I know you're hearing this for the second time, but welcome to episode 86.
Yeah, this is the Panelcast. My name is AJ.
And this is Brian.
In this episode, Brian and I will be reviewing Rotten and DV8.
We're also going to be bringing you a lot of news, as well as talking about the Green Lantern movie.
And Brian will be discussing his hate for Blue Water even more.
Yep, I just can't get enough of hating on Blue Water.
So, all that and more after this break.
Hey, this is Brian of the Forbidden Panel Podcast. I just want to invite you to listen to my companion podcast, The Geek Girls, featuring one-on-one interviews with geeky ladies. Look for Geek Girls on ForbiddenPanel.com. Hey everybody, welcome back and get ready for some comic book news. Alright AJ, what have you got for us?
Herpes.
Brilliant, but in the way of news.
Oh, herpes. I guess that joke is dead now.
Yeah, I was just leaving that awkward silence there for you.
Thanks, man. Good looking out. First off, I want to say, throw out a big hearty thank you to our junior for creating the animated intro for the panel cast. I think it looks awesome.
Yeah, it was definitely one of the highlights of my entire month, probably the year.
Well, and that's not saying much, because Brian really doesn't do anything. But, you know, thanks, Junior. We appreciate it. The animated intro looks great. It may be a little boring, but that's because we're boring, but you're used to that by now. So, moving on forward with the news. Even though Marvel Studios has offered assurances that the theft of Samuel L. Jackson's script for The Avengers and the subsequent leaking of portions of the script on the internet and a bid by the thief to make some money did not and would not cause production to come to a halt, it has almost seemed like The Avengers has been on hiatus in recent weeks in lack of news about it and because of the string of appearances by several principal cast members outside of Albuquerque, New Mexico, where the production kicked off at the end of April. Chris Evans, Scarlett Johansson are in L.A. on the 4th to present an award at Spike TV's 2011 Guy's Choice Awards. Tom Hiddleston is in L.A. on the 9th for the world premiere of Super 8. Robert Downey Jr. in L.A. on the 12th for the 2011 Hero Complex Film Festival. Thanks to fan-friendly actor Mark Ruffalo's productivity proclivity for tweeting, he has tweeted more than 36 times yesterday and responded to nearly 40 follower requests for retweets. We now have confirmation that production is still underway in Albuquerque and that it is going well. Between tweets, thanking his fans, and commenting on New York politics, Ruffalo offered several other interesting tidbits about the movie, including the fact that The Avengers is being released in 3D, is not being shot in 3D. The Avengers are still going on. It's not on hiatus. They're just taking a time out to be, you know, celebrities. Brian?
Well, it looks like the expansion for the Comic-Con Convention Center in San Diego has finally got some methods worked out to get paid for. It looked like the project, which ended up costing about $500 million, which was a little bit less than the $700 million that they were originally talking about. The mayor of San Diego has essentially laid out a plan to have this extension paid for by basically this creating this entity called the Convention Center Assessment District. And there's a lot of kind of convoluted things going on here, but essentially what they're going to do is to pay for the convention center by adding on a tax to the bill for all of the hotels downtown to essentially, get the people that are going to Comic-Con to kind of pay for the expansion for Comic-Con.
That's kind of sneaky, but cool at the same time.
Yeah, well, from what I understand, the city of San Diego already is kind of suffering from a lot of huge budget crises, and they don't really have the funds to pay an additional $500 million, and I'm sure that the people of the city wouldn't be too happy about having to pay that extra tax. So what it looks like they're going to do is to basically add on an additional 3% for downtown hotels and 2% for hotels in the Mission Valley area, and then 1% for hotels farther away from that. So it depends on how close to the convention center you're trying to get a hotel as to how much additional expense you'll have to pay. Which, in a way, I mean, I guess it seems kind of fair, and I guess, you know, as long as they're upfront about it, then I don't foresee too many problems with it. But, you know, hopefully this will end up working out all right.
And because of the expansion in San Diego, we're already seeing huge... I mean, you're seeing a lot of other conventions trying to start up in L.A. and Las Vegas and all these other places just to show the San Diego Comic-Con board that, you know, hey, it was kind of a mistake that you went here instead of coming to us. But that's not saying that they're even going to be successful or whatnot. They're just trying to give people alternatives to going to San Diego. Thing is how the convention sold out, like, what, 2 days into it?
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
It sold out so quickly that I wasn't even able to register as a professional
right
on there. I mean, they were gone by the time I got everything together, so...
Yeah, so... Yeah, so, I mean, if you can't make it down to San Diego or whatnot, you know, you have other choices to go to. Like the Inland Empire Comic Expo! Yay! Sorry, shameless plug there. Moving on, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2, the final installment in the beloved franchise, looks also to be the shortest. The British Board of Film Classification has awarded the film a 12A rating in the UK for moderate threat, injury, detail, and language, and clocked the runtime at 130 minutes. That number is 8 minutes shorter than the length of the previously shortest film in the Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix, and notably shorter than the 146-minute runtime of the first Hallows. So, yeah, it's going to be a short film, but hopefully they get right to the point and let the action and death and carnage begin. Having seen the new trailer in front of the Green Lantern movie this past week, I can tell you that I am very excited to see it. It looks very awesome. Funny side note, though, after the trailer had screened at the Green Lantern premiere, the entire theater was quiet, and I had to verbally say, "It's okay to admit you're a Harry Potter geek here," and then that's when everybody started clapping and cheering for it. So, yeah, us closet geeks are kind of excited for it. Brian?
Well, I enjoy the movies, so I'm just hoping that the pacing on this one is going to be a little bit faster than the last one, because I enjoyed it, but it was really slow.
Well, from the new trailer, man, that new trailer is epic. It looks awesome, and it got me so amped to see it. I can't wait. So hopefully, you know, if the new trailer portrays it properly, then you don't have to worry about the pacing there.
So there's a new bill that got passed in Tennessee that has caught the eye of the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund. Apparently, law that was just signed in, HB 300, is set to essentially, I guess it was designed to try to combat online bullying, but what it does is makes the posting of emotionally distressful images online illegal. So, what? I mean, that's an extremely vague sort of phrasing to use. And basically, all that a court has to prove is that a person posted an image online with the intent of causing another person emotional distress.
What?
Yeah, it's quite ridiculous. It's one of the most vague things I've ever seen. And it's a law that's not going to solve any problems. And it's going to cause a whole lot more. So I can understand why, you know, the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund is perking their ears up and coming out against this.
What? All right, emo kids, you're not allowed to post online anymore. That's what it's basically saying.
Yeah, that's basically all it's doing. It's, you know, trying to combat kids from posting stupid pictures, you know, whatever it is. But
it's the internet. They can't regulate it in that manner. It's a free form of expression.
They're trying. They're trying.
Well, they're not going to get far with it in America. Anyway, I'm done. So, Mike Mignola, the creator and writer of the Hellboy comic, revealed at this weekend's Calgary Comics Expo that it's unlikely that Guillermo del Toro will return to direct the third chapter in the franchise after helming the first two. You like how I rolled my R's there? Wasn't it sexy?
Very sexy.
Last I heard, he said he would not make it. Guillermo, who I would love in every interview, there's a new story on what his next movie is, and he honestly believes he's going to do all these things. But last I've heard, He said, I'm not going to get back to Hellboy. I'm not surprised because he won't live long enough to do a tenth of the movies he's told me he's going to make, says Mignola. Wasn't that very confusing? He adds, I can't imagine him making a new making a Hellboy 3. He's very enthusiastic and says he's going to do all these things, but that's not just it's just not feasible. Fans will certainly be keen to see further adventures with more characters from the comic, including Lobster Johnson, Roger the Homunculus, and the sentient floating head of a Nazi scientist, Hermann von Klimt. So I just can't imagine Hellboy 3 without Guillermo. It just doesn't make any sense to me, so I don't know. We'll see what happens.
So here's another interesting story along the lines of free expression, only this one was done in real life and not on the internet. It's a Bulgarian graffiti artist who's being dubbed the Banksy of Bulgaria. Defaced a war monument and spray-painted all of the soldiers to look like superhero characters. And a couple of other random characters, too. It looks like there's Ronald McDonald, Santa Claus, and the King from the Burger King ads in there. With the phrase, moving along with the times, spray-painted, well, in Bulgarian. I can't read Cyrillic letters, but so it was translated. But it's quite entertaining, so got Superman, the Joker, looks like Robin, Captain America in there.
I think that's awesome.
Yeah, it's definitely, I mean, if you're going to deface property, at least try to do some sort of artistic flair to it.
Did you just gay it up?
Probably.
Okay, just checking. Though it topped the box office charts and seems to be doing better with the general public than it has with critics, Warner Brothers' Green Lantern opening weekend box office haul of $52.7 million is being seen as a disappointment for the costly project. The studio's estimates earlier this week had it falling somewhere between $55 million, between the $55 million opening of X-Men First Class and the $65 million opening of Thor, with the result likely closer to the latter as a 3D review revenue bump would raise the price. On Friday, things looked good as well, with $3.3 million in the midnight showings and $21.6 million opening day haul. Yet it was downhill from there, with Saturday's takings dropping to $16.8 million. This thing continued to fall down, losing numbers left and right. We'll discuss why later on in the show, but it doesn't look like, with the numbers that it's going, due to the fact that the film cost $300 million to make, that it'll make back its money, and if that was the case, we won't see a sequel for it.
So it looks like there's a potential for 100 Bullets to come to the TV. Apparently, Geoff Johns has hinted that there is talks about 100 Bullets TV show in the works.
Yeah, David S. Goyer has been hired to pen a TV series adaptation of the DC and Vertigo's acclaimed comic 100 Bullets for Showtime. So, yay!
Yeah, this is one that I actually, a comic I haven't read, and I'm sure you've probably told me about 1,000 times.
1,001?
All right, well, 1,001 now, let me mark that down. So, I'll have to pick it up, and then that way I can kind of get on board with the excitement for the coming TV show.
It's awesome. 100 Bullets was written by Brian Azzarello. It was 100 issues long, and it was just, to give you a short idea of what it was, a mysterious man who approaches someone who has been a victim of a terrible wrong and gives them the chance to set things right by providing them with a handgun, 100 completely untraceable bullets, and documentation of the person primarily and personally responsible for their woes. So, yeah, that's what the entire series is about. So if you haven't had a chance to read it, you should. And if it's coming to Showtime, that's awesome because they're doing a great job of adapting shows right now.
Yeah, they've got a lot of good shows out there. And then, I mean, Dexter being the prime example, I think.
Absolutely. The new trailer for Dexter looks great, too.
I can't wait.
Drive and Bronson director Nicholas Winding Refn has previously spoken about his desire to direct a Wonder Woman movie. Now he's reportedly keen on getting Mad Men actress Christina Hendricks to play the role. If I get to do it, she's going to be in it, Refn told Vulture this week. Hendricks herself last year, indicated she'd be game, telling Rachel Ray, I've been waiting to wear the outfit my whole life. I'd love to do it. This would be just so much fun. However, the chances of such a film being made remain super slim, especially in the wake of the disappointing results for Green Lantern and the failed Wonder Woman TV pilot.
While I like Christina Hendricks, and I think she's a pretty good actress, I don't know if she really looks the part for Wonder Woman.
Yeah, but the same could be said about the person like Adrian Pilecki, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
She looked good in costume.
Well, the costume was kind of ridiculous looking.
You're ridiculous
anyway,
looking.
But yeah, I don't know. I would like to see a Wonder Woman film get made. I want them to find the right person for the role.
That can be said true about any type of film that's coming out there. You know, we all want the right person cast or what have you, but it's all just speculation at that point. We really can't say anything until it happens.
All right, well, why don't we go ahead and take a quick break, and we'll be back with some more news.
Okay.
Guys, this is Daniel Corey. I'm the founder of Danger Cat Creative Studio, and I want to tell you real quick about my upcoming comic, Moriarty, The Dark Chamber. It's about Professor Moriarty, the arch nemesis of Sherlock Holmes. Working with artist Anthony Diachidua on it, letterer Dave Lampier. Please go to dangercat.com and check it out. That's DangerCat.com. And please go over to Kickstarter.com. We're running a campaign right now to try to raise funds for the production of the book. So, you know, shoot us an email, let us know how you like it, and we'll see you on the web.
Welcome back to Panelcast, everybody. Ooh, excitement galore. Yeah. Anyway, continuing on with the news, Brian, why don't you go ahead and kick it off?
It looks like, in the wake of the problems that Bookstore Borders has had with going into bankruptcy, Barnes & Noble just recently released that they had $74 million of loss, which it sounds kind of bad that they're losing out so much, but it seems like most of that was due in part to their heavy investment in their Barnes & Noble digital sales, which actually increased by about 50% this year. So essentially, it looks like Barnes & Noble is trying to move into a more heavy influence with the digital sales. I think with the success of their various Nook digital books and just the general success of the Amazon store with all of their digital book sales, Barnes & Noble is trying to move into the right direction.
Well, maybe if they stop letting people read shit for free.
Well, I don't know. I don't think that that's necessarily a problem. I mean, you know, you give people a free sample, because I think they do, what, it's like you get the first few chapters for free, and then you can download the rest of the book if you want to read it.
Whatever, man. You just want to argue with me.
Yeah.
Okay. Moving forward, Lucy Punch has been cast in the female lead in FX's Powers. Punch plays Deanna Pilgrim, a detective who works cases in a special homicide division known as Powers, where she and her partner, Christian Walker, solve crimes committed by those with superpowers in a world where they are commonplace. Bendis and Avon created the comic while Charles Eagle wrote the pilot script. Also recently cast, Jason Patrick has scored the male lead of Christian Walker. So it looks like the show was, priming up to look good. I'm very excited to see it. Brian?
Yeah, I'm pretty excited to see it myself, too. I haven't read the entire Powers series.
Because you
but
suck.
I've read, yeah.
You
well,
suck.
Hey, at least I've read some of them. So, you know, I know what you're talking about. I know what the premise of this story is, and I enjoy it. So it would definitely be interesting to see something like that get translated to the screen. This sort of, like, you know, superhero crime noir kind of thing.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite books out there. I mean, it's a phenomenal book. I can't go on about it more than I already have.
I'm sure you probably could if we let you.
I'm sure I probably could.
A bit of unfortunate news in that former Batman illustrator Lou Sayer Schwartz died at the age of 84. He was mostly responsible for working as a ghost artist for Bob Kane's Batman Detective Comics between 1948 and 1953. And then eventually moved on to a career in advertising. But anytime somebody in the comic book field passes away, it's usually a sad thing, especially, you know, somebody that worked on such an iconic character.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially, you know, considering how long he worked in it in the business and stuff. So, moving forward in casting news, Jason Momoa has reportedly been cast in the bad guy role of Keegan in the untitled Sylvester Stallone-led and Walter Hill-directed action thriller based on the comic Bullet to the Head. Stallone plays a New Orleans hitman who teams up with the Gotham cop to take down the killers of their prospective partners. I have yet to read this book, but now that I'm hearing about it, I'm going to put it on my list to read for next week so I can let y'all know what it's about.
Well, hopefully it'll be better than the Judge Dredd movie.
Anything is better than the Judge Dredd movie.
Oh, man. That thing was pretty awful.
Absolutely.
But not as awful as this next story.
Good segue!
Yeah. My favorite, unfavorite comic publishers, Blue Water Productions, they're doing one of their biography comics, I don't know if you can hear the air quotes there, about one of my favorite, unfavorite authors, Ayn Rand. Out of all the people in the world that they could have picked to do a biography comic about, I don't know why they would have picked Ayn Rand, because, you know, there's some people out there that idolize this woman, and whatever. I've read some of her books, and they're pretty blah, and I don't know. I guess they're going to try to talk about her philosophy that she developed, and, I don't really see what's interesting about it. I've tried reading about her life, and it's just not interesting. This is out of all the things that they've done so far, I think this one is probably the one that I'm the least interested in reading.
Let me just toss this out there real quick. We don't hate everything Blue Water does. I mean, maybe Brian may, but we have a good friend of ours, Julian Aguilera, who does a lot of side work for us and is currently working on a side story for ZKS, who is working for Blue Water doing, you know, certain projects that we cannot talk about. But
yeah, okay.
He made sure, when he went into the interview, he made sure that he was not doing an origin story because he did not want to hear us talk crap about him on the show. So,
I should probably make my stance clear on Blue Water because I probably haven't really done that. But I don't hate Blue Water as a comic book publisher in general. Like, they have a lot of other titles that are just, you know, regular comic book titles. I have a lot of other franchises. My specific problem that I have is just their biography comics, like the Fame series and the Female Force and Political Power, whatever the crap. Like, they're unauthorized biography things. Like, I don't get why people would want to read a comic book about a famous person. I just don't understand the drive for it. I don't understand the drive to buy it. I don't understand why they even got the idea for it in the first place. Like, I don't know. It just seems bizarre and strange and alien to me. And so, you know, I don't know. I have fun kind of, you know, poking fun at it, but I don't have a problem with Blue Water, and I don't want to, like, look down on people that buy Blue Water comics or, you know, people that are working for them or whatever. I'm not trying to do that. It's supposed to be more of like a just kind of a tongue-in-cheek thing when I do my stories about Blue Water Productions, because personally, I would never purchase one of these comics. I wouldn't. I don't care about somebody's life enough to want to read a comic book about them. But, you know, whatever. I mean, it is what it is.
He says that now, but as soon as we go off air, like, I hate Blue Water and I hate you for putting me on the spot like that. You watch. It'll happen.
No, I figured you were probably going to try to put me on the spot about it anyway. So I'm just trying to make my position clear on how I feel about it. I don't give a crap about their biography comics. Everything else they do is fine. I don't care.
Awesome. Now that we have clarification on that, next week's Blue Water segment will include love and adoration from Brian. Speaking of comics, before we take our break right here, we want to acknowledge the fact that today the issue comes out for the death of Ultimate Spider-Man. while I know what happens, I can't really go into it into detail because, you know, the book isn't out yet officially. So please go pick it up. Ultimate Spider-Man is one of my favorite Spider-Man books. It's one of my favorite books ever, honestly. I just love how they did the character and all the different changes that they've done from the universe that we're used to, Earth 616. I just love everything that they've done with that world. You know, yeah, sometimes they drop the ball in some of the storylines and whatnot, but for Spider-Man, he's been kicking ass since day one, and I really, really dig it, and it's going to be sad to see him go. This isn't like all those other death things where we can expect him to show back up in like a couple months or what have you. No, he's dead. They've plotted someone to take over the space, and no more Peter Parker. So,
well, that's good.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not good that he died. It's sad that he died, but I mean,
it feels like they're committing to a storyline.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, if they can make a commitment to this and just, you know, move on, then that's great. That's the kind of thing that I wish comic books would do more, because, you know, a lot of times when these characters die, it's just meaningless because you know they're going to come back.
Right.
You know Superman wasn't going to stay dead.
Right. He's Superman.
Come on.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, these kinds of things, like, I don't ever feel connected to it. But if this is something that they're going to commit to, then yeah, I'm definitely going to go pick it up and read it.
Absolutely. And so you should. You go pick it up right now, guys. In fact, pause the show, run out, pick it up, come back. We'll still be talking shit when you get here. So, anyway, why don't we go ahead and take a quick break? When we come back, Brian and I will talk about some of the stuff that we've read this week.
Hey, I'm Penn from Mostly Harmless Entertainment. Come check out all our cool videos and movies that we do at mostlyharmlessent.com. You can also find us on YouTube at YouTube/mostlyharmless. Check out all the cool stuff we're doing around Redlands and IE and California and Washington and the world stuff. Okay, bye.
And we're back. If you didn't get enough of us, well, you're in luck, because there's even more.
Boo. You trying to call me fat? Is that what you're doing?
Yes, there's more AJ to love.
Awesome. Sorry, go ahead. Just crying.
Ew, are you going to keep crying, or do you want to talk about Green Lantern?
Either way, man, there's tears coming.
Yeah, I've heard some not great things about it.
Well, you know, okay, so this past week was the midnight premiere of Green Lantern. Four Color Fantasies was nice enough to do a special event for it, so we got our own theater with our own friends and stuff, and did a midnight showing. We got T-shirts and free bag of goodies and free trade paperbacks and busts and all that stuff given away in a raffle. It was just an awesome time and an awesome environment to see a movie. And you know, if you're local and you have a chance to go to one of Chris's midnight showings, I would highly recommend it. Because it's just it's a total different dynamic than your normal movie-going experience, because you're there with a bunch of people that appreciate the movie and are geeks just like you are. And, you know, I brought a friend with me who has never been to one before, and afterwards he was just so elated. He's like, it's so awesome because I got all this free stuff. And then on top of that, everybody's quiet in the theater to actually watch the movie. And then when you walk out of the movie, there's just clumps of people just discussing it. Even people you don't even know just join your discussion, and it's just an awesome environment. And you know, my hat's off to Chris for doing this, putting it all together. He does a great job with it.
Yeah, it seems like the whole midnight movie thing has really been picking up steam, and like it's really becoming an event.
Mm-hmm. I've been doing it for decades, you know, because I just like going to go see movies at midnight anyway. It's just to see them first and go on with my day afterwards, but having an event like this makes it even better. So yeah, I appreciate that. Unfortunately, sometimes you come across movies that aren't too great. There's a lot of people out there that are blasting the new Green Lantern movie. They say that it's not too good. It's not following the storylines. They represent the characters badly. Blah, 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 blah. And let me preface this by saying I haven't read a lot of Green Lantern books. I know a good deal about them. I've seen them in the Justice League cartoons and the comics and whatnot, but I've never actually spent time to read his individual story, except for where Dark Blackest Night came out, and that's when I started picking up on it. So having said that, I do know the base fundamentals of the Green Lantern. I know about Hal Jordan, Guy Gardner, Kyle Rayner, and, you know, John Stewart. And I know enough about it to say I'm an okay fan, and I appreciate it. But I don't know enough backstory to be able to tell you whether or not the film followed it. I know a lot of people are saying that it didn't and had some issues with it. I personally thought the movie was kind of cool. I'm not saying that it was great or anything like that, but it was visually, it was amazing. They did a great job with the special effects. The ring effects were top-notch, and everything came together really good. Ryan Reynolds actually did a good job as Hal Jordan. His acting chops, you know, however he portrayed Hal Jordan, I thought he did a good job. Peter Sarsgaard, on the other hand, stole the show. I think his performance as Hector Hammond just was top-notch. He did a phenomenal job with it. Even so much where you can't even recognize that it's Peter Sarsgaard. So, on that aspect, I give him full kudos. There were a lot of slow parts. And I had to keep reminding myself that it's an origin story. You're going to get these parts, you know?
Right.
A lot of explanation, a lot of history building, a lot of character development, because it's a origin movie. So because of that, I was able to overlook it, but a lot of people couldn't. They couldn't forgive the slowness of it. So there were a lot of problems that developed from there. Overall, however, you know, if I were like 10 stars being max, I'd give it a 7. Good 7, 8 in there. It wasn't horrible, but it wasn't great. In my opinion, it was better than Thor, but a lot of people think Thor was better than Green Lantern, so I don't know.
So my understanding of this movie is that it deals with kind of the same one of the storylines that was presented in Emerald Knights, where it's, you know, there's that whole story where they're talking about how Sinestro went from being a bad guy to a good guy.
You mean good guy to bad guy?
Whatever. Whatever, he did something. Yes. And so, yeah, but I mean, he ends up, you know, like embracing the Yellow Ring and all that other stuff like that. But, like, I've heard a lot of people complaining about that aspect of the movie, saying that they didn't do enough to make Sinestro a villain and that he was too much of a good guy and stuff in the movie.
See, so, what they failed to understand is in the comics for a long time, many years, Sinestro and Hal Jordan were actually really good friends. They were both good guys, and they worked together for a long time. In fact, you know, Sinestro helped mold Hal Jordan into the hero that he was.
Right.
So this first – what I didn't like about the movie was that this first movie was really nothing about Sinestro being the bad guy. It was Sinestro actually being the good guy. But he turned so quickly at the end in the credits is when he becomes the bad guy at the end of the credits scene. I didn't like that. I thought it was too rushed. I wanted to see more of them being friends because that's what it was in the comics. It took a while before they were actually enemies. So in that aspect, Sinestro being a bad guy had nothing to do with the movie at all.
Right.
It was about Parallax.
Okay. So maybe people are just, you know, misunderstanding the point of the movie or something.
People want to jump the gun. They wanted to see Joker in the first Batman. They want to see... You know,
right.
You know what I mean? They want to see all that. They don't want to see a developing relationship. They just want to jump right into it. And that's just not how this movie went about. And in that aspect, I appreciated it. But it did rush into it by, you know, showing that at the end of the movie, he does indeed become the bad guy leading into the second film. Now, you know, maybe in film timeline world, that is indeed a decent pace. But for me, I would have liked to see them fight together more.
I've heard a few mixed reviews as far as the special effects. Some people absolutely hated the costume and certain other characters, the way that they were animated. And I've heard other people say that they were really fantastic. So,
you know,
kind of weigh in?
When I walked into it, I automatically hated Hal Jordan's costume before seeing the movie because I thought his head looked huge on the tiny body. And that kind of carried over in the film, but after a while, you kind of don't care. You're more, I am anyway, I was more focused on how detailed Parallax was, and also Hector Hammond's costume, and then just the special effects altogether. I really dug, so I really didn't pay too much attention after a while. So I can't say too much. They did explain why the costume was like that, though. They took some serious time into the explanation behind the costume. So there was understanding in that matter. But yeah, like I said, a good 7 or 8 out of 10. It wasn't a horrible movie. I'd definitely see it again. I'll get it and watch it on Blu-ray. I think it's a good job. I saw it in 2D because, as Chris stated when he was introing the movie before it started, it wasn't filmed in 3D. So why ruin it by watching a conversion of 3D? Just watch it as it was filmed and appreciate it that way. And because of that, I was able to appreciate it. I don't know how it turned out in 3D, and I really don't care. I thought it looked great in 2D and was happy with what I saw. So the ending was real quick, though. The boss battle was just super, super fast, and I wasn't too happy about that either. But it wasn't a horrible movie, like I said. Fanboys, you know, were the worst critics.
Yeah. I think that's pretty much true. I mean, I've been there myself with a lot of other things, and, you know, you find the little smallest details that you can to nitpick about that are pretty much irrelevant when it comes to anything.
Right.
So, but I mean, it just as far as it is as a movie on its own, because, I mean, I don't go and see a lot of films just because I can't justify spending the money anymore because it's too hit or miss. You know, there's too much of a chance for a movie to turn out terrible that I don't want to spend, you know, $14 for nothing.
Right.
So, I mean, is it worth going to see just as a movie as itself, you know, regardless of how true it is to the Green Lantern storylines and the comics?
Absolutely. In my opinion, it absolutely was. Again, I took a friend who's not a big comic book aficionado, doesn't know much about it, knows that comic books exist and respects that. And he walked out of there flying high. The whole experience, the movie, the event, everything about it, loved every second of it. And for us, you paid $14, we paid $25. And he felt that he got his money's worth. He was extended.
I don't even know how much movies are anymore. That's how long it's been since
I've actually paid $25 because of it's a special event. You know, we got the picture and all those stuff.
Yeah.
The environment. Okay. So we paid $25 for it.
I think that having that sort of event probably would make the experience a little bit better too, because you kind of get psyched up for the movie.
Yep.
When you're going to see it, rather than just, you know, going to sit in theater with a bunch of random strangers.
And Chris did it in style, man, because you're in a separate line. He let us in at 10 o'clock. The line wasn't all that bad. You know, we got in there. We got our stuff. We had raffles and a spinny wheel in the lobby, as well as, you know, gifts and giveaways in the lobby. Then we walked by all the other geeks sitting in line waiting for their midnight showing. And they're looking at us like, what's going on? We're carrying these bags that say Free Comic Book Day. We're wearing our brand new Green Lantern shirts. We're all walking into the theater. Man, I sat in the middle section, center of the row. We had the entire row to ourselves. You know, it was awesome. You know, so.
Well, that's not really that surprising. I mean, Chris definitely has got a passion for comics.
Yeah, gives a shit.
5 minutes, and you know, I mean, like, he's not just running a comic book store because, you know, he wants to be cool or make money or whatever. Like, he's doing it because of the comics.
Right. He's doing it for the fans, because he's a fan, and he wants to be in an environment where he would enjoy being a fan, and that's what he creates.
He appreciates the culture, like the comic book.
Absolutely.
He's a part of it. It's not just, you know, doing it just because.
Right. So, and like I said, because of that, he did a perfect job, and I really respect Chris for what he's doing with it. We had 500 people in the theater, and all of us had a great time, regardless of the movie. You know, I think personally it's worth a matinee. Every movie I think is worth a matinee. Some movies are worth seeing at different times. I think this is with the heat and everything. Go see this as a matinee. Have a good time. Enjoy the movie and walk out and feel like you've gotten your money's worth. If anything, at least to sit in the air conditioning for 2 hours. You know?
Maybe I'll, red box it in the next month or two when it comes out.
Yeah. Check it out. I'd like to hear everybody else's opinion on it and their complaints. You know, I'm a huge monster comic book fan and a huge geek. You know, I can recite issues and storylines and whatnot. But in that aspect, I can also appreciate and understand that sometimes you got to step away from that lifestyle and just be grateful that you're able to see the character on screen and come to life.
Right.
You know, and this is definitely one of those times where I was able to appreciate it, you know, and respect it. And like I said, Peter Sarsgaard nailed it. That man, he did a great job with the character. He didn't do a Heath Ledger level, but I'd say at least a notch or two below that. And that was Peter Sarsgaard. So he brought it for the role. And like I said, Ryan Reynolds toned himself down for the role of Hal Jordan. He did a good job with it. So it was enjoyable. And there you have it, my review of Green Lantern. Yay!
What about the details as far as FP goes?
What's Forbidden Panel doing now? We're prepping for the Alien Empire Comic Expo, which is coming up on September 4th. We're going to have a bunch of great guests and wonderful things happening. We are going to be putting up the vendor application sometime before the end of the week. So for all you vendors out there who would like to participate, please let us know. We'll also be opening up the ticket sales coming toward the end of July. We are prepping to go to Comic-Con. Woo, Comic-Con! In San Diego. So that's going to be awesome. July 10th, we will be having a release party at the Rose Bowl Comics and Collectors Show in Pasadena, California, for the new release of our newest title, El Super Maximo, number 0. We'll have the artist and creator there, as well as Justin White, who did the inking and colors, and myself included. So it should be a lot of fun. Come on out and check out our newest title. Be able to pick it up for $3. It's pretty cheap. What else we got going on? One good announcement that I'm able to now say with having confirmed everything. On October 30th at the Fox Event Center in Redlands, California, we will be hosting Forbidden Panel's first annual zombie fashion show.
Nice.
Yes, the zombie beauty pageant, we're calling it. We'll keep checking the website for information on how to join and how to sign up and become a contestant. Tickets will be $15 online, $20 at the door. It's going to be a lot of fun. Like, seriously, zombie beauty pageants just rock. So it'll be our first foray into that. Otherwise, everything is going, trugging along. We're getting out there, people. We're doing it. And we're having a blast doing it as well. So, yay.
Yeah, it seems like FP definitely, I mean, kind of come from our humble beginnings, and now we're getting to a point where, you know, things are almost happening faster than we can keep track. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, it is kind of nutty, but it's still, it's what we want. So it's, you know, we're getting what we want, and I'm enjoying every last minute of it. I wish I could reveal to you and show you guys that this new image I've been looking at all day. For one of the titles.
It's pretty awesome.
One of the titles we got coming out sometime next year called Serial Killer University. Man, this stuff looks awesome.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited for it.
I'll tell you, Brian, right now. I'm looking at it. It's a Serial Killer University. Underneath it says Carpe Pratum, which means seize the prey. So, yeah, that's pretty awesome. But that's pretty much everything we got on Forbidden Panel. We want to thank everybody for tuning in and checking us out, being on the website, whatever. Keep up with our updates. Check out iecomicexpo.com. Find us on Facebook, Twitter, in our homes, in the bathroom, hiding behind the bed. You find us everywhere.
And I just want to thank everybody for listening to episode 86. And just thank you for being fans in general.
Yay, fans. Fans keep you cool in the summer.
It's not what I'm talking about, but...
Same thing. Alrighty, Brian. Let's go ahead and get the fuck out of here. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We will catch you guys next week. Thank you again. Special, special thank you for Junior, the creator and writer for El Super Maximo, is also the animator for the panel cast animated intros that we've...
Yeah, played. I definitely like that A+ number one.
Yes, yes. Thank you very much, sir. Thank you, everybody else, for tuning in. Brandy... is doing a kick-ass job with all the press kits and the releases and stuff. I want to throw an extra special shout-out to her. And Julian, we still love you, even though you work for Blue Water.
Yeah, just no bad feelings, man. Don't worry about it.
Not now. We'll talk crap about you once we get off the air. But for now, in public, we love you. It's okay. All right, guys. See you guys next week.
Panelcast is brought to you by Forbidden Panel. Please visit us at www.forbiddenpanel.com.